to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Salam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. If you have been following this program for the last 6 weeks, we have started this discussion wherein we ruminate on Bhagwan's own writings, and we started with Premavahini, the first series of articles that flowed from the divine stylus. And with Bhagwan's grace, along with Sai Prakash, who is the co-host of this program, we also have today in the studios for Vahini Satsang Mr. Amit Sood from Delhi. Mr. Amit Sood is a sales and marketing executive. He's been heading the sales and marketing functions of many multinational companies for decades. For more than 25 years, he has had an exceptional career in marketing and sales, and currently he's moved on to be a leadership coach. So he's coaching corporate leaders after having spent 2.5 decades in the corporate sphere. And what is more important is Mr. Amit Sood has been a very ardent devotee of Bhagwan. He grew up as a Balvika student and someone who's been trying to live his teachings in his life. He's been a very active Sevadal member. In fact, he's here in Prashantanilayam as part of the Delhi Seva, the Satya Sai organization's contribution to Prashantanilayam Seva, which happens annually. So he just completed his Seva, serving in the Sai Kulwant Hall, and we are fortunate that we met, and today he is here with us in the studio. So welcome to you, Mr. Amit Sood, to Vahini Satsang.
Thank you so much, Bishop. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. So, dear listeners, let's move on. We are discussing the second chapter of Premavahini, and we had ruminated on the first three paragraphs. We'll now move on to the last two paragraphs. So let me play the 2.4 and 2.5 paragraphs of Premavahini chapter 2.
Yemi cheyuchundinanu manavunaku ekagrata pradhanam atti ekagrataku సమదృష్టియే శుభదృష్టి. సింహము ఎంతటి మృగరాజైనను ముందునకు 3 అడుగులు వేసి వెనుకకు తిరిగి చూచుచుండును. ఎందుకట్లు? క్రూర జంతువునకు ఏకాగ్రత ఎట్లు కుదురును? కాకి, పిల్లి, సింహముల కన్నులు ఎల్లప్పుడూ నలువైపులా చూచుచుండును. వాటి చూపులు ఏ వేళలందు బెదురుచు చెదురుచూ ఉండును. హింసావృత్తిగల ప్రతి ప్రాణి యొక్క స్థితి ఇటులనేయుండును.
Whatever man may do, ekagrata or one-pointed concentration is important. For such one-pointed concentration, samadrishti or equal vision is shubhadrishti or auspicious vision. Even though the lion is the king of the forest, every time it walks 3 paces forward, it looks back. Why is it so? Can wild animals have one-pointed concentration? The eyes of the crow, cat or lion always look in all directions. Their vision is always rid with fear and scattered. This is the state of every wild-natured being.
So that is what Bhagwan says here. He emphasizes the aspect of ekagrata, one-pointed concentration. And very beautiful statement here, isn't it, Sai Prakash? Swami says, samadrishti, equal vision is auspicious vision.
Yeah, Swami says one-pointedness and samadrishti. Are these the same when Swami says samadrishti and one-pointedness?
No, Swami says, for such one-pointed concentration, equal vision is auspicious vision. So, for equal vision, to have equal vision, which is auspicious vision, you need to have one-pointed concentration.
Okay.
In fact, yeah.
You know, just one thought when Swami is talking about one-pointedness.
Yeah.
As I was listening to it, you know, what Swami used to tell us when we were students.
Yes.
When we were students, for us, one-pointedness was very essential.
Yes.
And it is essential right now as well.
Yes.
But as students, you know, the supply and demand for Lord Ganesha goes up exponentially as the exams come closer. And somehow or the other, we think Lord Ganesha is going to excuse all the nights we slept early and didn't bother to study. But, you know, two things come to my mind if I may share. I mean,
yeah.
One thing is the advice that Swami would give to students because of this one-pointedness. He would say, talk less.
Yes.
Talk less. So when you talk less, your memory power increases.
Yes.
And you're able to concentrate better. And you're able to focus. And then he would also say, writing once is equivalent to reading 100 times.
Yes.
So you may read the same chapter again and again and again. But if you are able to write it once, you know, just see it and write it once. And then close the book and write it again. And then he says it won't go out of your memory. It will stay in your memory. That kind of one-pointed concentration. In fact, our chemistry teacher in the school, when we had to appear for the 10th class examination, 12th standard. So we had to, you know a lot of equations, chemical equations. What he would suggest is, just write all the 50 equations that you have to know by heart. Just write it and display it on the cupboard. Just keep looking at it every day, every day. Just keep looking at it.
Yes.
Wow. He would say, just look at it.
Yes.
And, you know, it will just sink into
sink
you.
Sink you. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, two things come to my mind as you're talking about the school days.
Mm-hmm.
Swami used to talk, yes, tell a lot about less talk. And he used to also mention less connections.
Less contacts.
Less
yes.
contacts.
Yes.
So I think both are towards that same facet of sharpening your one-pointed concentration.
Exactly.
Basically, in today's terms, less distractions. But the other aspect that you also referred to about the school atmosphere, you know, again, this occurs to me because, you know, when you mentioned school, one-pointedness just hit me because if you have been a student in Sri Satyasai Higher Secondary School, Prashant Nilayam, which I can vouch for, one-pointedness comes very naturally because whatever you do it only for Swami.
Right.
I mean, the atmosphere in the school is so charged with what else can we do for Swami? What else can I do a card? Can I, you know, can I sing? Can I dance? The whole year would be spent to learn one mantram or two mantrams so that once a year I will get a chance to stand next to Bhagwan and chant and I get one Pad Namaskaram. You know, you will spend your whole year trying to run and pick up your skills in a game so that at the end of the year when there's a prize distribution ceremony, probably I'll have one picture with Swami. And I think, you know, that one-pointedness, how Swami inculcated in us is something which is very phenomenal. And I think along with that, you know, as he was, you know, granting unconsciously that one-pointed concentration on him, I think we also developed equal vision to accept whatever came as his prasadam.
Right, right.
I think, you know, many times I know of situations, you know, especially in the school, I remember, you know, when I joined, Swami used to give prizes to all the winners.
Right.
I mean, all you had to do, it didn't matter whether you were an athletics champ or you were just one of the 10 who cleared the 10,000 meters in the first...
What was that called? You know, you participate and complimentary, you know, compensatory prize.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there was for 10,000 meters, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you are not the first, second, third, you know, there'll be this... whatever, complimentary, compensatory.
I forget the name, but yeah. Even that certificate Swami would give.
That's So all you had to do, so it didn't matter whether you won like 5 first prizes, long jump, high jump, first and everything, or you just won one certificate. Ultimately, you'll get one picture with Swami and you'll get it from Bhagwan.
No, see, that is the beautiful aspect of competition versus, you know, coming together.
Cooperation.
Like cooperation.
Yes.
So he says sports should encourage cooperation more than competition.
Competition.
Absolutely. I remember recently there was a conversation around the sports day. And
I remember a conversation which I heard, wherein somebody asked Swami, year after year you are watching these acrobatics, and almost a lot of it appears to be repetitive, and some of it, you know, one can get bored to. How do you again and again watch this? Swami says, to you it might be repetitive, but to me, I'm watching a new child every day. And from his side, it is the same level of affection, samadrishti.
Yes, absolutely.
Every child.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And why I mentioned this is, you know, there came years when suddenly, for whatever reason, Swami did not give individual prizes. Like whole year you worked
right.
to get that individual photograph with Bhagwan, but Swami decided to give prizes only to the champions. You know, only the athletic champs got. And in the subsequent years. You know, you worked whole year for that, and again Swami threw a surprise, and only one
house
cup.
Captains.
Yeah, only the one cup was given, perhaps to or only the house captains. You know, it slowly dwindled like that. But you know, I will not go into the stories. I mean, there have been very beautiful stories of how Swami compensated each one's prayer. You know, people. You know, Swami knows how to bless us with whatever we have pined for. But at that moment, you know, when that didn't happen. You had to develop that samadrishti, you know. You will, at that point in time, you feel, okay, I was doing it for Swami, you know. So why am I expecting something, you know? I was doing it for Swami, so that's fine. I have done it for Him. In fact, this really reminds me of Professor Kasturi. Professor Kasturi, whom everyone would think, who, as someone who had a very, very honky-dory life, you know, someone who lived with Bhagwan, who was Bhagwan's biographer, Bhagwan's translator, someone who traveled with Bhagwan, someone who was literally with Bhagwan dawn till dusk, caretaker of the ashram, secretary to Bhagwan. Everyone would have probably, you know, you would imagine that he had great life. But actually, if you see the personal life of Professor Kasturi, it was just simply a life of tragedies. That's all it was. Because his wife was for 11 years paralyzed. And she predeceased him, and he had two sons. One of them passed away when he was in his prime of youth, and the other son had retired. And you know, when he was thinking now finally he will spend time with this other son, and together they were actually spreading Swami's message, going to villages in Karnataka, and you know, singing and speaking the Satya Sai Katha, which he had written in Kannada. Suddenly he passed away. He was a PhD. When he was 85, the other son passed away at 60. He was 60. And then he had a daughter whose marriage was on rocks right from the beginning. So, but you never ever felt, if you know, anyone who has interacted with Professor Kasturi, you ask them, they will say, oh, Professor Kasturi, such a lovely person. How much joy he used to give us. How beautiful he was talking to you. Only angelic expressions of love and joy you get whenever you speak to people about Professor Kasturi. And it really reminds me of that. He was able to have his equal vision, perhaps because of that one-pointed concentration on Bhagwan. In fact, once when I was speaking to Madam Padma Kasturi, daughter of Professor Kasturi, you know, she said that once I asked my father, I can't understand you, because when my sons come, when your grandsons come from Bangalore, you speak to them so lovingly, so endearingly, it seems you're so attached to them, you know, you shower so much love. And then again, after some time, when I see, you look so removed from everything. What are you? I mean, are you really this attached, or how are you? And Professor Kasturi says, oh, okay, I duped you also.
It is the intoxication of Swami's love, perhaps, that
love.
His heart could totally immersed in.
Yes.
That neutralized all the pain, and there was none of that existed.
Yes.
I'm reminded of a beautiful incident that Ramdas
yes.
Talks about. And here, Ramdas was a Harvard professor who became a follower of Neem Kiroli Baba. And so, once he was... He says, completely intoxicated with love of Krishna. For hours and hours, he experienced Krishna consciousness, he says, wherein he was totally immersed in love of Krishna, and along as he was actually thinking of Krishna and reciting, singing to Krishna, he happened to be driving on a highway at a very slow speed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in complete intoxication,
there was a blue light in his rear view mirror. And when that blue light came, his immediate thought was that it is he who has come.
Wow.
The one that I've been thinking about. And now, of course, gradually it dawned on him, it is actually a police guy. So he stops on the side, the trooper, as he calls him, comes along, but Ramdas is so intoxicated with love,
yes,
that he is showering the same affection, same unconditional love, as he calls it, that he received from Neem Kiroli Baba on the police guy.
Wow.
So as the police guy comes forward and he's asking for his license and registration number, please. And he is ready to give his life to him. Because in him, he sees Krishna. Right now, all that exists around him,
yes,
is Krishna.
Krishna.
And so, gradually, this police guy begins to be moved with love. Now, how often, he says, is a police guy refusing unconditional love from a person he stops? So, a conversation begins where the police guy doesn't want to let him go, although there is no fault of his. So they become best of friends, as if who have known each other for long, and they are talking about cars for several minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ramdas is talking about this incident that they run out of topics. They are strangers, finally. But there is so much love that the police guy is unconditionally receiving.
Wow.
He does not want to let Ramdas go. Finally, he lets him go. And he says, run along, he says. There's nothing that I can do with you. I have to do with you. And as he gradually drives away, he looks in his rear view mirror and this tough police guy is actually waving him away.
Wow.
Having received abundance of love.
Yes.
From him.
Yes.
So once one is completely intoxicated with this love.
That one-pointed concentration.
Absolutely.
Then you have that samadrishti, as Bhagwan is saying. In fact, why I mentioned about Padma Kasturi is there is one very, very, very powerful thing once she mentioned. Because one day when Professor Kasturi returned from one of his talks, you know, which is to give to foreigners generally, she was very upset. You know, she said, what is the point of you going out and giving talks every other day? You know, you go and tell that Swami saved this person, Swami saved that person, Swami cured this person. Look at your own family. Your wife is in this condition. My marriage is on rocks. You lost your son. What have you gained from all this? I can't understand. Why do you do all this? It doesn't mean anything. Swami doesn't mean anything to us. And Professor Kasturi says, whatever you are saying, it might make sense to you. As far as I am concerned, whenever Swami helps anyone else, he is helping me. As far as I am concerned, Swami is God. So, I have absolute faith that whatever he has done is what is best for me. I don't even think that, you know, you are mine and this is my wife, my daughter. For whomever Swami blesses, he is blessing me.
Beautiful.
I think, you know, when I read this line, that equal vision is auspicious vision, this is what actually came to my mind. Because, you know, when you have that kind of one-pointed concentration on the Lord, you are blessed with such equal vision. Come joy or sorrow, everything you take it with that equanimity, and that's when I think our vision becomes so auspicious.
Absolutely, and auspicious vision is equal vision. Once
yeah.
it becomes auspicious, immersed in Swami,
yes,
then everything appears to be the same as it did to
yes.
Professor Kasturi.
Yes,
there was no pain, and there was little pleasure.
Yes.
Everything just the same.
Same. Actually, that talking about vision, there's another very beautiful incident that comes to my mind. There was this long time devotee of Bhagwan, Mr. Deen Dayal Gupta, and he used to come to Vrindavan, and many Vrindavan teachers and our teachers, they used to narrate this story where they have seen this devotee who would come to the old bungalow in those days, way back in the 70s, and who would always stand in front of the old bungalow and sing this line, Tere Siva Prabhu Koi Nahi Hai, Tujhko Mera Pranam, and he would be blind. And they have seen that, you know, he would always sit there and pour out his heart singing this song. And they should always wonder who this guy is, you know. But Swami used to give him that chance. And after many years, suddenly they saw that he has got his eyes back. And that's when they asked him about, you know, how all this happened. And then he says that many years ago, like more than 20 years ago, he had come to Bhagwan and Swami at that point in time said, see, according to your karmas, you are not supposed to be having eyes. You are supposed to lose your eyesight. So I am giving you a choice. You decide whether you want to undergo that suffering in this life or you want to postpone to a future life. So, Swami says, you take your time, you think and tell me. And Mr. Deen Dayal Gupta, he immediately said, Swami, in this birth, I know you and I can understand you. I can understand why you are doing it for me. And I have seen you. So, I am fine. I will undergo it this time. Swami says, okay. So, you take the train, go home. Once you reach home, from tomorrow onwards, you will not have your eyesight. And so that's how it happens. So he goes back home. And after that also, you know, he had accepted that very happily. He would come for darshan and he would just stand. You should do this, Tere Siva Prabhu Koi Nahi Hai, when he had eyes. And after that also he continued to do. And so Swami had told him he's going to be blind for life. And so that went on and on, and suddenly after many years, 20 years, one day one of his eyes started discharging some liquid, and you know, so he was wondering what is happening. All his relatives and sons, children, they told him that, you know, get your eyes operated. He refused. He said, no, this is something that Swami has asked me to undergo and I'm perfectly fine with it. You should never go for any medical treatment. But that morning when all this was happening, he was thinking, what should I do? He was thinking, should I write a letter to Swami? Should I ask anything? And suddenly his grandson runs and gives him a paper and says, there's a telegram for you. And he takes the telegram and he reads it. And it's written, get your other eye operated, Baba. So that is when he gets the other eye operated, and after 20 years, he gets his vision back. So, you know what? See, when he had the eyes, the amount of love that he had for Bhagwan was the same when he lost all the eye, both the eyes. There's the same, I mean, here you have vision literally, vision literally and, you know, metaphorically. And then he was blessed with that auspicious vision. Auspicious vision of not only seeing the Lord but seeing everything as the Lord's play. I think it's really...
In fact, after this one-pointedness, Swami makes a very beautiful point. He says, this kind of one-pointedness is not possible in animals.
Yes.
So he says, animals, those who have this nature of harming others. See, the animal nature,
yes.
He says, those who have this nature of harming others, the moment you harm somebody else, which is kind of hardwired in animals, they have to harm, they have to kill others for eating food. So they are always filled with fear.
Fear.
Fear, and their vision is very unstable.
Yes.
They keep looking here and there. So Swami says that crow, cat, and lion, all of them keep looking here and there all the time.
Yes.
Because
it is rid with fear.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, this is a very unique point, you know, one-pointedness and fear.
Yes.
So, he says, if you have this nature of harming others, if you have that inbuilt nature of harming, like that is an animal nature,
correct.
You cannot get this samadrishti, nor can you get ekagrata. That is one-pointedness.
In fact, the two thoughts that come to my mind, you know, anybody who has fear is someone who has, at some point in time, has hurt someone. I know, and you are expecting, you don't know when what is going to recoil.
Absolutely.
I think that is what always bothers you. That's the reason why you are having sleepless nights. That's the reason why.
Absolutely. I'm reminded of how Mahatma Gandhi, even for those who ruled against him, who passed judgments against him, or who were his jailers when he was actually in prison, he would make slippers for them. Pure acts of love for them.
Wow.
And he would carry no harsh feeling, pure love for them as well.
Wow.
And that is what got him the Samdrishti.
Samdrishti, yes.
Where everyone saw him, even the British, when he travelled to Britain, he received abundant love from the people who were losing jobs because Mahatma Gandhi was here advocating use of khadi.
Yes.
So the people who worked in the clothes industries there were losing jobs, but they were filled with affection for Gandhiji even there.
Yes. And the other thought that what comes to my mind is, here Swami says, can wild animals have one-pointed concentration? But I feel one being which contradicts this is the Nandi. Because the Nandi has one-pointed concentration on the Lord. If you have one-pointed concentration on the Lord, then you can evolve from being a wild-natured being to actually being a divine-natured being. I think the Nandi is almost a deity now. We worship.
Right.
But provided you have that one-pointed concentration. Sagita, yes.
We can go on about Sagita.
I mean, it just reminds me that, you know, if there is any animal which serves to turn mankind onto the divine, eventually becomes divine. I think that's what we have seen in the story of Sagita or Nandi.
Absolutely.
One-pointed concentration. So we'll move on to the next paragraph.
మానవుని యందు సౌమ్య దృష్టి రావలేను. ఈ సృష్టి అంతయు కళ్యాణమయము వలె తోచవలెను. మనపై మనకు విశ్వాసం ఉన్నట్లు సర్వసృష్టి మీద ఉండవలెను. ఇందులో భయమేమున్నది? ప్రకృతిలో చెడు ఏమాత్రమునూ లేదు. చెడుగు ఎక్కడేని ఉన్నచో అది మన దృష్టిలోనే. మన దృష్టిని పట్టే సృష్టి ఉండును. మనము వేసుకున్న కంటి అద్దాల రంగును బట్టి ప్రకృతి రంగులు మారును కదా.
Man should have pleasant vision. The entire creation should appear as pervaded with auspiciousness. Just as we have faith in ourselves, we should have faith on the entire creation. Where is the scope of fear in this? In nature, there is no evil whatsoever. If there is evil anywhere, that is in our vision only. As our vision, so is the creation. Will not the color of creation change based on the color of the glasses we wear?
So, Mr. Amit, you are someone who are living in the world, who are someone who has spent 25 years dealing with all kinds of people in the corporate sphere. Do you agree that there is no evil anywhere?
Oh, yes. When one looks outside, filled with thoughts of either, you know, happenings that wherein one oneself has been involved in some kind of a negative deed, everything else appears to be bad. I remember when I had joined one of the American multinationals as general manager, a lot of senior people who were elder to me were reporting to me at that time. And at this point of time, as I was taking on this position, I was filled with tremendous apprehension that I will not receive loyalty from them. Because they will feel insecure in my presence, and now I was younger by almost 25. Sometimes I was younger to them by 18 years, 20 years. How would they be able to accept me as their boss? So as long as I was working with them, I was filled with this anticipation of they're about to be doing something wrong to me. And I found that for years I was not able to let go of this. Until one day it dawned on me, wherein I heard Swami talked, and I had heard this before, but it is up to Swami to make sure that it enters our head also, where Swami was talking about universe is a reflection, reaction, resound of your own thoughts, words and deeds. And instead of putting spotlight on their actions, I started putting it on my thoughts. How am I treating them? What are my thoughts about them? Am I already doubtful whether they are doing anything wrong or not? And I resolved, against all odds, in my heart, that at least I would shower total care and affection upon them and give them an opportunity to be loyal. And let me see if it works out. If it doesn't work out, we are back to the square one. We are not in working positions. And it changed things completely. I was really surprised wherein I won their hearts. And people much elder to me admired me for the little that I knew of the job. And we became best of friends. And even today we continue to be.
Wow.
So actually, whatever feeling I see others with, whatever is there in my eyes, whatever is there in my heart towards them, is how they appear to me. They aren't actually isolated from who I am. In fact, I remember hearing once a wise man tell that the entire world as it is being, the image is being formed actually in our head. We are listening in our ear, which is inside our head. The image of what is happening outside is actually is being formed in our eyes, which is also inside our head. The reaction to what is happening outside, whether it is joy or jealousy, yes, or anger, is, yes, also happening inside our head and heart.
Yes.
So all of what is happening outside, I am reacting to inside this self or this body of mine, which I have actually started considering. So if I can turn this into loving being, if I can be loving towards others in my own feeling, and if I look at them with positive feeling and beauty, and I anticipate the best from them, all that will happen, and all that will appear to me is beautiful.
Wow. In fact, that makes me reflect on how Bhagwan, you know, looked at all of us. I think that is the reason why he inspired so much goodness out of every person. You know, we might think that this person is a politician, how could, you know, we have a lot of reservations in trying to love that person, in trying to shovel affection on that person. But I think Bhagwan had no issue at all in showering love on anyone. And I think that is the reason why, you know, whatever goodness was there on everyone, they just acquired so much of momentum and so much of galvanizing proportions.
Absolutely.
You know, a very interesting episode comes to mind. You were there in Kodaikanal as well.
Yes.
You know, in the year 1999, somebody had bought a property from Swami.
Yes.
And and he was yet to pay the money to the trust. Like, the agreement, everything was done. And that gentleman, obviously there was some delay, and he would come for darshan and Swami would give him interview and talk to him. And the trustees and the elders, like, they would say, Swami, Swami says, I have no differentiation. He is coming to me as a devotee, and I don't even see that, you know, he owes something to, I mean, it's a very important lesson actually.
Yes.
See, even when somebody owes you money, like, okay, in this case, he had to pay the trust because he acquired the property from the trust. But Swami has no differentiation.
Yes.
Unconditional love.
Unconditional love. There is no condition at all. And he's giving. He's just continuously showering love. In fact, there was a lot of discussion, and some of the teachers were saying, Swami, how do we do like that? How do we live like that? Swami says, I have no reservations of any kind. And another thing which comes to mind is this reflection, reaction, resound. On one hand, yes, the whole world is a reflection, reaction, resound of what is within us. But when Swami was in the physical form, he is also a reflection, reaction, resound.
Yes. Absolutely.
He would also reflect and react and resound, you know, exactly, you know, he will echo what is inside your heart. And he will echo what's in your mind. There is this beautiful story of one of the alumni, like when he was a student, passing his 11th and 12th standard, Swami said, kya kar sakta hai after 12th standard? Then he said, Swami, you should guide me. Become IAS officer. Very good job. Then he said, yes, Swami. Thank you, Swami, for guiding me. Next day, maine kya bola? Not IAS, sir, IFS. Then he said, yes, Swami. Then again he comes next day, dekho, all that you leave aside, you become a good businessman. You are good for business. He said, Swami, okay, Swami, no, you become teacher, that is good. Then he thought, something is seriously wrong here. Like, it used to change by the day, now it's changing by the minute. And he said, Swami, now what should I become? Should I join the army? Should I do this? Should I do that? So Swami had covered all, you know. He said, Swami, why are you doing this? Why are you not guiding me? Then Swami said, what can I do? Your mind is confused, sir. So I am only reflection. I am reflecting what's in your mind. Your mind is full of confusion. So that is fusion. So I am only reflecting what is in your mind. And then he asked Swami, but that's not the reason I am coming to you.
I want to know what you want to tell me. How will I know that? And this is the very beautiful part, because that's relevant for all of us at all times. And Swami said, Dekho, it is very simple. When it rains, there are a lot of puddles on the road, you know, in which as you're crossing and going, you look inside the puddle, do you see your own face? No, you can't, because there is a lot of mud. It's muddy water, muddy water. So when there's a lot of muddy water, you can't see your own face. But if you clear off all the mud, if there is clean water, then you can see your own reflection. So Swami says, clear your mind. Remove all the dirt from your mind. Remove all the ripples from your mind. Remove all the impurities from your mind. Then my reflection will be in your heart.
Wow.
So he says, when you remove all that, you will know what I want you to do.
Yes.
That will reflect from within you.
Wow. Amazing.
So, you know, what Swami is saying is, animals, for example, who have this, who are like hardwired to harm and who have this harmful tendencies in them, they cannot have ekagrata. This link between your vision and your attitude and fear is so amazing. Like I've never, first time I'm also kind of, yad bhavam tad bhavati, Swami says.
Yes.
As is your vision, so is your experience. So, you know, he says you can start developing good vision.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, you have a pot, Swami would say, whether dirty water, there are two ways of cleaning that. You flush it with good water, flush it with good water, flush it with good water, then all the dirty water goes out. Similarly, you cannot change the world in which you are living in,
yes.
But you can change yourself. And when you change yourself, probably three people who know you will have a positive attitude towards you. Then possibly a family will have a positive attitude. Then maybe your community, then maybe a state. So when you change your attitude, automatically what comes back,
yes,
depends on how strong your,
yes,
new attitude is. Like if you decide that my attitude is one of unity, I see that there is this divine spark in everything, then, you know, the world will respond to you like that.
Okay.
You know, I was just reading this Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, and there is a beautiful story there, which Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says. He says, there was one disciple who said, God, my master told me God is in everything. God is in everything. And so there was a mad elephant running and coming, and the Mohut is coming, running next to it. He said, moo, 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 moo. And then this guy said, no, God is in this elephant also. I will stand in the center of the road. So he stood in the center of the road. The elephant came running, and with its trunk, it just pushed him aside and continued running. And he fell down, and he was so upset. He said, my master is wrong. And they said, why? He said, God is in this elephant. Then why didn't, you know, listen to my feelings? Why this reflection was not there? Then Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says, in such situations, you should think that God is also in the mouth, who says, tells you to move. God is also...
In fact, I remember Swami also narrating this story, and Bhagavan says, not only that, Swami says, because you consider God in that elephant, the elephant did not kill you.
Finish you. No, he says that also. He says, because you saw God in that elephant, it did not finish you. But why don't you think that the mouth is also God?
God.
So, yes. So Swami says, yes, you need to have that. So that's why there is, you know, there is a very convenient philosophy which people resort to. Swami says, bhava advaitam, not bahya advaitam.
Yes.
Bhava advaitam. In your feeling, you can have advaitam. You can, you know, your experience is one of that of oneness. And Swami, in his Hislop's book, Conversations with Sai Baba, he asks, Swami, there is God in everybody. Atma is the same in everybody. Swami says, so what? will you start treating your the servant maid who comes to your house, will you treat her like your wife? Just because all are same. Swami says, in that case, you should think that the same divine spark is in everybody.
Yes.
If you think all are same, Advaitam is only in the Bhava.
Bhava
Advaitam.
Yes. So, then you respect every person.
You respect every person, but you have to act according to the norms of the society. You have to act according to the norms of, you know, individuals, you know. Because we are in this world of apparent duality, you have to accept those rules and regulations and then live by it.
But you can always, because once when you have that feeling that there's divine spark in everyone, you will ensure that you respect them, you don't hurt them.
Exactly.
And I think that, and that is what is spirituality all about.
Absolutely. And when you look at world as beautiful and loving, it so appears. I remember a Zen story.
Yeah.
So moral is also towards how the world is, whatever you, however you look at it. So there is a samurai warrior, and samurais are known to be ferocious and extremely disciplined and impeccable character, supposed to be the highest of nobility. And so there is a samurai warrior who goes to a Zen master and asks the Zen master, "Master, teach me about heaven and hell."
Mm-hmm.
The master says, "You call yourself a samurai warrior? Look at your hair, they are so unkempt." This guy is taken aback. And he says, "Look at your clothes, so dirty. You samurai warrior of your clan wear impeccable, perfect white, and you are wearing dirty, disheveled clothes?" This guy is beginning to get extremely angry. "And look at your sword and how you are holding it. This shows you how untrained you are and unpracticed you are. You have terrible discipline." So this guy at this point of time is ready to strike. And the more he speaks about the warrior, the more angry he gets. Finally, he tells this warrior, the master tells him, "You don't deserve to know a thing. You can run away from here. I'm not going to tell you a thing." And at this point of time, the warrior takes out his sword and raises it ready to strike at the master. The master tells him, "This, my friend, is hell."
Yes.
And now at this point of time, the warrior realizes that deliberately, the master made me angry, knowing fully well that the samurai sword, only a flick of my hand would have split him in two. And he was ready to sacrifice his life to teach me the lesson of what hell is.
Wow.
Profundity of this situation moved him completely, and he was filled with gratitude for the master. He fell on his knees with tears in his eyes, and he's bowing completely to his master and telling him thanks. Master tells him, "And this, my friend, is heaven."
Heaven.
Wow. So heaven and hell are purely in your experience.
Yes.
And if we can neutralize our anger and our ecstasy to an equanimity, then the world will become the same beautiful place as it is, actually.
Amazing. In fact, there is, what Swami says here, in nature there is no evil whatsoever. Might be a little difficult to fathom this, you know. I was just thinking, you know, we might think bacteria is harmful, and you know, today research says that, you know, we are more bacteria than than we are humans.
Right.
We have 30 trillion cells in our, a 70 kg person has 30 trillion cells, but there is 40 trillion bacteria.
Yeah.
So, but everything, I think this is an exercise that we should do perhaps to see, when Bhagavan says there is no evil whatsoever, and if there is any evil, it is only in your vision. Perhaps every time we see something and we feel this is evil, perhaps we should introspect and see and ask ourselves, is the evil outside or is the evil inside? Maybe that will throw us a lot of insights. Because, you know, these days when you see the news channels or newspapers and you have all these things that are unpleasant, and that's how you paint the world, that's how you paint your perception of the world. In fact, there is one very interesting thing again that comes to my mind, which Professor Venkatraman once asked Swami. He told Swami, why is there so much of restlessness in the world? You know, why is there so much of violence and peacelessness in the world? And Swami says, Venkatraman, before I come for darshan, it was Vrindavan, how is the session? And so he says, Swami, everyone is quiet. No, but what is everyone thinking? And Swami, they are all praying, they are all waiting for you, and they are all, some are in meditation, some are lost in thinking about you. And Swami says, at this point, if suddenly there is this mother with her infant, and this infant starts crying, what happens? Swami, there is a lot of disturbance. What happens to other people? Swami, they are all very agitated. You know, someone probably will think, why are these ladies like this? Why can't they take care of the children? Someone will say, how come she's even sitting in the first line? Earlier in our era, nobody was allowed to sit in the first line. There should be much more discipline. Someone else is saying, why does she have to come for... If a baby is not fine, she should not come for darshan. Why is she disrupting our whole meditation? So all sorts of... There is chaos in everyone's mind, Swami says. But is everyone's mind, or is there anything that has happened so catastrophic? If there are 5,000 people sitting there, 4,999 people are fine. Yeah. It is just that one lady who had an infant, who made this noise, and we paint the whole thing. Tomorrow, the newspapers will say that Sai devotees indiscipline caused chaos in the ashram. And they'll paint the whole ashram as in indiscipline. You'll paint the whole, Sevadal community as being irresponsible, not looking after people who are sitting in. I think that's how...
Yeah, then I think Swami also added that similar is the case with the world today. He says there is so much of dharma,
yes.
There is so much of goodness, there is so much of humanity, there is so much of divinity, but these acts which are outside the realm of dharma stand out, and therefore they get highlighted. Just like the child's cry gets highlighted in the hall, silent hall, so also when there is adharma happening, that gets highlighted because that's being pushed out.
Yes.
But what is also perhaps needed is that the news must also highlight the beauty which is there everywhere.
Yes.
Like the literature. Our literature talks of so much beauty as well. But the newspapers are often filled with the kind of news which rather repel us early in the morning if one was to pick it up.
Yeah, that is because that is their reflection.
Yes.
The newspaper editors and the news writers, that's what is in their mind.
In fact, absolutely. It is basically their perspective.
Possibly Radio Sai is one news channel, media channel that's focusing on the positivity. I'm sure there is a lot of positive news and media as well.
Yes.
But it doesn't get as much traction because there's no sensationalism in it.
But I think what Sai Prakash you mentioned is so important in the sense that, this gets highlighted because, on a white sheet, that one or two black spots, they get highlighted.
Exactly.
And I think that's what, people, if you utter the word murder, bomb, that attracts attention. If you just say smile, baby, it does not attract that much attention.
Yeah.
So, so that's what the media is sort of, and so it's partly because this is something which is contrary to our nature.
Exactly.
Very true. And in this context, Swami also says that if you see a man smiling on the road, and you are passing by, you wouldn't stop and ask him, why are you smiling?
Yes.
But if you see a person on the road crying
yes.
you might be tempted to stop and ask,
yes.
What's making you cry?
Yes.
Because it's unusual for us
yes.
to cry.
Yes.
While it's normal for us to be happy.
Yes.
Right. I was just thinking, because we have come to the end of chapter 2.
Yes.
Maybe quickly we'll summarize chapter 1 and 2.
Yeah, sure.
So
please.
That, let's just revise very quickly what Swami started. He started the chapter 1 with the concept of viveka or discrimination, and he said why is viveka required. He said compared to all other ages and yugas, there is so many avenues for people in today's in Kali Yuga, but still there is lack of peace
yes.
and happiness. So he says, how do you develop this peace and happiness? Only by good behavior. And for good behavior, he said, character is essential.
And he said, people say that knowledge is power, but according to me, character is power. And character is something which comes and which stays with you through lifetimes. It's not just this
yes.
life. He mentioned
yes.
the examples of Jesus Christ,
yes.
Buddha, and Vivekananda. And he said that, you know, why are they remembered, Shankaracharya? Why are they remembered even today? Because they had very noble character. And so after that, he went on to say that, you know, when you're born as an individual in a particular family, in a particular situation, whatever you're born with is the consequence of your previous births. Obviously, because character moves with you, sticks to you from birth to birth. You're born with a certain sense of certain characters, certain nature of character that you're born with. But there is ample scope to grow. And he says there is ample scope to change your essential character. And he gives the story, examples of Angulimala and Ratnakara. He says, they had these vasanas, or they had this kind of nature. But they could change it.
Yes.
And by good company and by, you know, Namasmarana, they were able to change it and acquire good character. And then he summarized the, concluded the first chapter by giving a list of, qualities. He said bhakti, nishkama seva, vairagya, prayer, contemplation, vicharna. He said these are all good qualities.
The means by which you can actually transform your
exactly.
vasanas into virtues.
Exactly. So he said these are good qualities which can help you on that path. And then he of course concluded chapter 1 by saying that it's not important, these magazines and these spiritual books, that these articles that are being written, is to drive people to change their natures. But just by reading it, nothing will happen to you. If you want to read this book to pass time, it only time will pass and nothing will happen to you. That's how he concluded the chapter, first chapter. And the second chapter, which he starts off with, saying that he continues from there, and
yes.
he says these spiritual books, magazines, Upanishads or Gita or Shastras, he says these are all available at absolutely no cost.
Yes.
So cheap and so available. You know, we were talking about the
yes.
discourse booklet
yes.
and we were talking about a lot of, actually, Gorakhpur Press,
yes.
you know, they make all these books available
yes.
at such low
Gita
prices.
Press.
Gita Press.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing.
Yes.
That's a kind of service they're doing. But what Swami says is, they are available
yes.
at absolutely no cost. But then he also says, there is no belch
yes.
of wisdom.
Wisdom is behind, hidden behind the books.
Hidden
yes.
behind the books, inside the books. And their wisdom is not able to penetrate through the thick binding and the ornate binding of the book.
Yes.
And so he says, it almost feels as if the God of wisdom, the Son of wisdom is hiding behind the piles of books.
Yes.
And he says, you have to grow over these books to be able to acquire that wisdom. So all these books, Shastras, Gita, everything are just pointers.
Yes.
These are just pointers. And he says, that kind of wisdom is available beyond the books. Then we go on to the next part of the chapter where he says, which parts?
Where he's talking about the conduct,
mm.
bereft of culture and wisdom,
mm-hmm.
is what is happening and what is...
So basically, where he's talking about the books,
mm.
where Swami says that if you have to read any books, you have to read the stories of enlightened beings.
No, that's what. So there he says that, yes, there are books that have all this wisdom, but for those who are interested in search of truth.
Yes.
Those who are interested in searching for truth in their lives, they have to read the lives of Mahatmas, saints, and good literature that will develop Bhagavad Chintana or
yes.
contemplation on divine.
Divine.
Then he says, if you read all other kind of books, you will lose peace of mind.
Yes.
And then he comes to the next point, this is very subtle today, the portion that we did today.
Yes.
We think that, you know, like we were talking about our student days and how we need concentration and one-pointedness. So he says, one-pointedness is not merely the attribute of, you know, it's not natural just because you're a human being, you're a person. It is linked to the kind of nature that you have. So if you have more of animal nature, then you will not be able to have that one-pointedness.
Yes.
You will not be, so you should have that, you want to have that concentration. He says to achieve anything in life, whatever you want to achieve, like suppose you want to read good literature, you want to improve, you want to have that contemplation on divinity, you need to have that concentration.
Yes.
And that concentration can, is complete, is comprehensive, only when you have good nature.
You have to get over your bestial tendencies.
Exactly. And he says, you can start that with having good vision.
Good vision, yeah.
Vision is drishti.
So important.
He would always say, you know, vision is one of the main so main kinds of food. In fact, he has told in many discourses that only what you eat through your mouth, that is not food. You see, what you smell, what you hear, whatever you intake, whatever you take in, that is food.
I mean, when you say sattvic aharam, it is sattvic through all the senses.
And and then this last point which he says, that if you change your vision, the whole creation changes for you.
Yes.
So, drishti and srishti, that's what he says. And he says, if you wear a green pair of glasses, you're going to see the whole world green. And if you wear a red pair of glasses, you'll see the whole world red.
Yes.
So I think that's where Swami concludes chapter 2.
Wonderful. I think we'll move on to the next chapter in the next session.
Right.
And just two thoughts that come to my mind. You know, when you mentioned about converting our vasanas, Bhagwan in Sandeha Nivarani very beautifully says that a charcoal which will turn anything black, you know, anything that comes in contact with charcoal will have the dark shade. But if it comes in contact with fire, then the whole character changes.
It glows.
It glows.
Right.
And there Swami says, so what you need is the fire of wisdom. I think that inquiry. I think if once that is there, then your vasanas also can be, can glow into virtues.
In fact, he adds to the same analogy. He says, the wind that is blowing is what makes the fire sustain. That wind is sadhana.
Sadhana. Wow. I think let's pray to Bhagwan that he gives us that zeal to pursue on this sadhana, so that slowly, one step at a time, we convert our vasanas into virtues. Thank you so much, Mr. Amit, for being there with us. We hope, I hope and pray that we can have you for many more sessions of Vahini Satsang, and offering our salutations and gratitude to Bhagwan for giving us this beautiful opportunity to ruminate on his immortal writing, Prema Vahini. We thank you all, dear listeners, for being with us. As always, please feel free to share your feedback. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. With prayers at Bhagwan's lotus feet, we take your leave. And you will now move on to our playlist on the Asia Stream. Thank you so much. Sign out.